Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, YouTube, anywhere you're listening or watching us. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and as always, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Sings.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
You know, there's some guests that tick some boxes. A lot of people always ask me what the show is about, and I'm sure they ask you.
Yes.
Since you have many more friends than I do, but people ask me what the show is about, and I say the lighter side of the dark side. Also, basically, I like to interview interesting people, people that have a lot of interest that I'm interested in. And today we hit the motherlode. We have somebody that has so many facets to them that it's overwhelming almost. We have somebody that not only is a writer, a poet, a former belly dancer, a journalist. She also is the editor of formerly the Vegetarian Journal, now the Vegan Journal. And you know how we always like to talk vegan here, even though I'm not a vegan, although she would say I'm pre-vegan. And also, and most importantly, also does ghost tours, is a witch, and does tea readings, tarot readings, and smoke readings, and all sorts of things. One of the most fascinating guests we've ever had, and I know we're not going to get to all of that, but I just wanted to get it all up front, it's Risa Miller.
Woo! Thank you so much, Mark. That was a very impressive introduction to what seems to me like everyday life.
And there's so much more. I don't even want to get into your piercings the first time out. But we also, normally, I would be drinking our sponsor, Raise Energy Drink. And I encourage everybody to do so. But today, because of you and because you'll be giving me a tea reading, apparently, a tea leaf reading, I had to actually go to Goodwill and buy a teacup and saucer because I only had mugs. But I figured I would drink some green tea today.
That's a perfect choice. And I like your teacup a lot. It's really cool.
Thank you. And, it's, nothing but the best Goodwill. But, and you know why I chose green tea, right? Because I was thinking chai.
It's my favorite.
Exactly. But if you ever are really sleepy and you need an energy drink, here's your new favorite, Raise Energy Drink. They're the best. They're vegan. And the best part about it, zero calories, zero carbs. Zero crash. If I wasn't drinking this delicious green tea, I would be drinking some Baja Lime, which tastes like Baja Blast at Taco Bell, or the Fruit Punch Voodoo, or Sour Gummy Worms. They have all sorts of great flavors. And you can't get them at stores, but you can get them at GNC's or Jim's, or get them the cheap way. Go to the description in this podcast and on YouTube or on Podcast Catchers. Use our code and get 15% off Raise Energy Drinks. It will wake you up and no, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash, zero dyes, zero meat. So, Risa, you were born in York, Pennsylvania, one of the oldest cities in the United States. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. It was, in fact, the first capital of the United States for just a few months. That's where the Articles of Confederation were signed and the United States was born, basically.
Yeah, my ninth grade history is coming back to me. But how was it growing up in that town? And since it's one of the oldest cities in the United States, New York, the state and city were, offshoots of that, obviously. What type of ghosts are there around York, Pennsylvania?
Well, in this region of Pennsylvania that you're discussing, the South Central region, Gettysburg kind of takes the prize for all the ghost stories. And there are a lot of reasons for that. But I think that York is underrated when it comes to ghost stories, really. There are a lot of fantastic old buildings. Ghost hunters love it in York. And growing up there, I fell in love with a lot of the old architecture. And at 15, I became a tour guide. And it changed my life forever. I've been a tour guide on and off since then, which we'll just say is over 30 years. And it kind of gave me a basis as a storyteller. I loved talking to people about history. I loved being in the old buildings. I loved especially the Victorian era. I'm obsessed with Penny Dreadful, though it's been long off the air. And yeah, that was growing up in York. Small town vibe, lots of history, but close enough to Baltimore and Philadelphia that you were never far from a city.
So I was reading a book on financial sorcery, and one of the things they said in there is to make
great segue.
is to make friends with the ghosts and spirits of a place. And they said pretty much every place has its own ghosts and spirits. Do you find this to be true?
I do find that to be true personally. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not a medium. I don't talk to dead spirits. And I would say that I am very sensitive, though. I find energies, entities in almost every space I go into. Think about how old the land we're living on is.
Right.
I mean, most people only think back to colonists, but there were people in America way before the colonists. Lots of native cultures were here first. They had their own beliefs, their own rituals, and this was their land. And of course, there are spirits of animals to think about too. They are no different than us. They leave the same kind of emotional energy behind. So yeah, there's definitely energy in every place. And I think interacting with it is a good thing to do. You certainly don't want it to be, you know, awesome. Agitated with you. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I think there's a lot of misinterpretation there too. I think like you hear a rapping sound, it doesn't mean the energy is hostile. It means they're trying to talk to you. They
right.
want to communicate. So yeah. Listen. Yeah, but don't assume that it's a bad thing.
I have an old building and there's definitely a presence in my apartment that I noticed like right away. And so I just kind of ignore it when it makes noises.
Well, but, you live in Koreatown, so that's gunfire, but that's another thing altogether. I'm kidding. That's an LA joke. But now, if that's true, why don't you hear a lot of hauntings of dogs and cats and animals? You know, you never hear like, I'm being haunted by this goat. I mean, you never hear stuff like that. Or this horse is like, can't leave me alone. Or do you?
Mark, I think you're talking to the wrong people. I hear stories like that all the time.
I gotta hang out with you more. I don't know, but it's just I just see like ghost hunters, and there's always like some strange human apparition, but it's never like you never hear somebody like meow meow meow. And I don't have a cat. What's going on? You never hear that.
Well, there are definitely lots of ghost stories of animal presences, and if you go into something that say used to be a slaughterhouse, anybody can feel that energy. Anybody. You don't have to be psychic for that. You can feel the pain of all of that death. And I would say that in the town where I give ghost tours, Ellicott City, we have quite a number of animal spirit stories. We have a whole animal spirit tour that people are allowed to bring their dogs on. But it includes horses and goats and cats and dogs. And it's fabulous. And people have a lot of fun. And, you know, I think also
sharing their pets.
People have a lot of fun with their dogs on the tour.
Okay.
So the dogs get freaked out?
That's happened. There's one spot, it's one of our hot spots in the town. And I was in the middle of talking about the Battle of Monocacy and how the soldiers came back and the roads ran red with blood. And you next thing you know, all the dogs were barking at something behind me. None of us could see it, but every single dog could. So we just pushed on. We moved on down the street to let the dogs have some peace and the spirits have some peace from the dogs as well.
We just got out of my season, Halloween, which is your season. The thing that I had read, you had gone to York and you had done tours there. But
I did. It was my first time ever doing ghost tours there. And I've done history tours here in York, but I had never done ghost tours here, and I I researched it and wrote it myself. I spent a lot of time at the Historical Society. I talked to random people about, you know, have you had an experience in this building? You know, it's a process collecting the information for a ghost tour.
Sure.
And you have to add a lot of different facets into it. And I also love urban legends. So I included a few of those that were Pennsylvania centric. But it was fun doing a ghost tour for the first time in my hometown.
Apparently a lot of witch lore in York.
There's witch lore in York. Pennsylvania has a really unique set of witch lore. It's hex magic. And I don't mean hex like you think of. It's from Pennsylvania Dutch. It's really different, and it's definitely a unique to the South Central Pennsylvania region kind of magic.
Interesting.
And then from York, you went to, now did you go to NYU first or Western Kentucky first? Because you studied screenwriting.
I went to NYU first. Yes, I went to NYU right out of high school. And previous to that, I had taken a writing program at the University of Virginia. And then NYU Film School, and then Photojournalism School in Kentucky.
As far as I know, and I've researched you pretty thoroughly, you haven't written a movie. But,
yeah, I've written more than one. I've never
have
done
you? My researcher's fired. But so you did. So well, you did write movies. You were.
I did.
Yeah.
And I did. I have had plays produced, but I've never gone the route of doing anything with screenplays. They just sit in a dusty box under the desk.
Okay, because you know, we've both written screenplays. It's tough, and but I mean, you're not, you know, you're obviously passionate about writing, and why NYU? I mean, I know why NYU, but how did you go to Kentucky? Where did you just kind of like went totally another way with it?
I did. Well, it was just one kind of storytelling for another. So. Mm-hmm. When I left NYU, I got a job writing at a newspaper, and my roommate was a photographer, and I really fell in love with photojournalism, the idea of visually telling a story, and I decided that I had to do that instead, and I was really sure about it. So I went to, there were only three schools at the time in the country that offered it. I sent for information from all three. Two of them never sent me an application, and the one that did was Western Kentucky, and that's where I went.
How dare they? Nice. But was it, I mean, it must have been a culture shock going down to the South.
Yes, it was a big change in more ways than one. My all black wearing self did not naturally fit in with Southern girls.
Not a big goth scene in Western Kentucky?
There was not. But you know, I maintained. I was myself. I loved the program. There were people there from actually all over the world for that particular course of study, and it was a great experience and a great way to learn visual storytelling, to learn to use a camera to do it.
And to go on our whole nationwide tour, you ended up. Now it's funny because you live in the Baltimore area.
I do. But
when I think of Baltimore, I think like Homicide, The Wire, and friends that I know from Baltimore who are just like, you know, it's like a war zone. And then I see you in your idyllic farmhouse with all your plants and on your videos. I'm like, where in Baltimore is this? I just know the corners.
First of all, as you probably know, when you're talking about a TV show or any one particular neighborhood in any city, that's just one area. Sure. There, Baltimore's a big city. There's a lot of diversity. There's a lot of different kinds of neighborhoods. And as you get out away from the inner city, there's country, there's suburbs, there's a whole range of living situations. So it's everything you would expect in an area of the Mid-Atlantic.
Sure. So how did you end up there? Just
I worked at the Baltimore Sun.
Right.
Yeah. I worked at the Baltimore Sun. Go ahead.
No, which is a very prestigious newspaper. You were writing or photography or both?
I was an editor.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Just for writing. Risa doesn't play. She goes right into editing. She's just like, forget it. I'm going to skip a few steps.
I was an editor there. I worked there for 5 years, and then I had a commercial photography studio for 20. And wow. That's no longer what I do. I do still take pictures. It will always be part of what I do. But I've just decided to move on to other ventures at this point in the game.
Well, you must be appalled at this lighting scheme that I have, because for some reason it's the sun setting in Los Angeles, and there's like my window, just I can't get it quite closed. So this will pass, but this is like, you're like, no, we got to wait for the good light. But you became vegan like 20 years ago.
27 years ago.
Obviously, you were five. But what you were way ahead of the curve. And we're discussing veganism because we do that all. We've had plenty of vegan guests. My former co-host was vegan, and Nicole is newly vegan now.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations.
And my mother she, when I was a kid, she was vegetarian. So she was even ahead of the curve before you. And she's recently become vegetarian again, although not quite vegan yet. I've gone out with many vegetarians. 27 years ago, there weren't a lot of options. The kids today don't know the struggle of a vegan in the 90s.
That's right. Yes.
Tell us about the struggle of a vegan in the 90s. I want to hear about this.
You know, I've actually thought it would be really fun to write a book about what it was like being vegan in the 90s and include some of the terrible recipes that I used to make. But I don't know.
Oh, like what? Tell us one. I got to hear one. One terrible vegan 90s recipe.
So there's vegan mac and cheese now, and it's pretty solid. And people have come up with all these great ideas, like soaking cashews to make a cream sauce. And you could go into any grocery store and buy vegan cheese that melts. In the 90s, that was not the case. You would make pasta, and then you would take nutritional yeast and stir it in with some really awful, gritty soy milk. And you would sort of pour that over it. And it was just the worst thing you've ever tasted. I would try to smother it with paprika or chopped spinach or anything, but I still ate it because it was my food. But it was not an appealing dish at all. And I remember dating in college being like, oh, I'll make dinner. And sitting there going, oh, shit, what will I make? And it was usually, I would usually opt for like the safe choice, marinara sauce over regular pasta or something.
That's what I was going to say. I just, I really like vegan cheese. So for the most part, I just try to use not cheese.
Yeah.
Like if it's pasta, it's going to be marinara. I'm going to keep it simple.
Oh yeah. It's a classic and it's always good. And nobody thinks it's weird because a lot of vegan food is still considered weird even now. Yeah. And, you know, people
maybe in Maryland, we're in LA, it's like the norm now.
That's exciting. I've been wanting to get to LA and do like a vegan tour, but it just hasn't happened
yet. We have a lot of good vegan places out here.
Yeah. But I will say that the vegan cheese was Nicole's stumbling block as far as
I would have gone vegan sooner if it wasn't for my love of cheese.
But she has found She's found some good cheese, but it took a while.
I haven't found good cheese yet.
Well, you found some cream cheese that you liked.
Yeah, but cheese. I've just sort of accepted the fact that it's never going to taste like cheese. Like, as long as you let go of the fact that it'll never be cheese, it's really just like, it's more like having a cream-based something is more what it's like. Cheese is gone. They don't make anything that tastes like cheese.
you haven't had cheese in 27 years, so Rhys is giggling, but really, cheese has come a long way. Now, there's a couple of things that I can say that you probably relate to. My father's lactose intolerant. So he used to have, this is before almond milk, cashew milk, oat milk, all the milks. There's no excuse not to drink milk these days, and I don't. But he used to have Mocha Mix, and I would go over his house. And they would put Mocha Mix over cereal, and it was the worst. It was so bad. Now, with almond milk and soy milk, it's just like, it tastes like milk. It doesn't, Mocha Mix was just, it was awful. And I remember quite a few years ago, more than I would like to say, I was dating a vegetarian, and Boca Burgers were fine. That was about it. And we tried the Boca Chicken. And grilled it, and it was the worst. It was so bad. It tastes like fish. It was horrible. It was the worst. It's supposed to taste like chicken. Now there's good vegan chicken options.
Yeah.
You've seen it come a long, long way.
I have definitely been on the entire journey with it. And I will say I used to eat my cereal with orange juice because I thought the vegan milk options 27 years ago were so horrendous.
Oh, so bad.
I couldn't do it. I literally put, orange juice on.
Orange juice on, like, wow, I never thought of that. That actually doesn't sound bad, depending on the cereal.
Yeah. I got used to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think, probably the chocolate cereal is probably not, but I can see that with like, cornflakes or Captain Crunch or something, but
yes, cornflakes. That was it.
Cornflakes with, because you're going to drink orange juice anyway, you might as well pour it on the cornflakes. But so when did you start editing the formerly the vegetarian journal, now the vegan journal, because I guess there's no half step in these days.
About 4.5 years ago, but I had worked for them previously taking pictures. So it was just a step forward in the evolution. Their senior editor left and I thought about it for a while and I thought, do I want to go back into publishing? And then, you know, the idea of working for a publication that was, you know, promoting plant-based living and food was just, the temptation was too great. I had to take the job. So, yeah.
And you've made the transition from the vegetarian journal to the vegan journal and, and also put it on YouTube with some great recipes.
Yes.
So was there any pushback from the vegetarians? Like, wait a second, we're not vegans, we're vegetarians.
We've gotten a great amount of support for it. And in fact, we got quite a number of letters saying, it's about time. Thank you for switching to vegan. So yeah, it's been a positive change.
That's great. Now, let me ask you a question. Because this happens probably on a weekly basis. I'll ask somebody if they're vegetarian, they say yes. And they're like, well, I eat fish or I eat chicken. Does that piss you off? Because that pisses me off. And I'm a meat eater. I'm pre-vegan, as you so kindly put it, but because that pisses me off.
Honestly, it doesn't. I try to meet people with compassion and explain to them that fish and chicken are not vegetables. So, you know, it's just a simple conversation and I still applaud them for their efforts. So,
okay. So, all right. That's okay. Now, have you always been intuitive?
Mostly, except when I'm trying not to be.
Are you trying not to be now or?
Right now, I'm trying to focus, quite honestly, on looking at the camera instead of down here at you.
No, so. That's well, geez, I know. Or is this one? Please, taking, no, I understand. It's, it's so weird. The Zoom thing is so weird. When you were young, were you? You could feel the spirits.
Because when I was young, I was probably even more intuitive than I am now. And like most young people who have that experience, I was told, well, my family was cool. They were like, it's fine. We believe you when you say that you see ghosts. We believe you when you say you have these experiences, but you should not tell other people because they'll think you're crazy.
Oh, really? So you were one of those kids.
I was one of those kids. So I learned over time to push it out of my head, to stop thinking about it, to not listen to those nudges or whatever you want to call it. And it took me... having just experienced so many experiences I couldn't explain, even as an adult, to start just letting it filter back in. And it's sometimes it's a great way to exist. Other times it's not so great.
Two strange things happened today, Risa, and I don't know how I should interpret this. And I am not intuitive at all. I mean, and Nicole will tell you, I am not intuitive at all. I can't read people to save my life. I don't know what's going on. I don't know the future. But two weird things happened. Now, Nicole was actually going to be doing a tarot reading before the show.
Yes.
And had moved it early because I messed up the time. I thought our time was going to be 3 and it was actually 4. And then that reading was postponed.
Okay.
Weird. That whole thing just got weird. And then
serendipitous.
That's a little serendipitous. Here's another serendipitous thing. I was walking about an hour ago. And I passed former guest David Jay, who was the bass player for Bauhaus and Love and Rockets, who was sitting at a coffee shop. And I was thinking, should I say hi to him? But he was really deep in conversation, and I was like, probably just I'll just let it pass because he wasn't looking near me, and you know he would have said hi, but who cares? But I haven't seen him in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was weird to cross his path, at least at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, just walking.
Yeah. I will tell you, I don't necessarily think coincidence is a thing. And not just because I'm intuitive. Interestingly enough, in journalism, they teach you that coincidence is not a thing. And many science was also teach you that coincidence is not a thing. So when these things line up in the way that they do, it's because there's a reason. You were supposed to cross paths with him today. Maybe you should have said hi. And for Nicole, that reading wasn't supposed to happen at that moment for whatever reason. It's supposed to happen some other time because more information will come to you at another time.
Yeah.
Well, that just that isn't that just like me to pass up a moment like that. But now Nicole, like you said, Nicole does tarot cards and you do tarot cards. I've asked this of Nicole and I've asked this of other tarot card readers on the show. If you're so intuitive, why do you need the cards?
The cards are a tool.
The cards are a tool. The tea is a tool as well. It's the same.
And the smoke is a tool. But just getting into tarot for a second, because I'm assuming that's where you started with readings, or was it?
Actually, I started with tea.
see what I'm saying about my intuition? I have none. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But so you started with tea now, and you have been a tea enthusiast for a long time.
I can remember.
You're a tea enthusiast, but you like green tea. You like very basic tea.
I do. You know, I have a lot of fancy tea, and people who know me love to gift me fancy tea, and I will drink it. I mean, I enjoy and appreciate the nuance of a really exquisite tea. But for my everyday tea drinking, it's just plain old green tea, no frills, no sugar, nothing. Just wrap a cup around it. That's how I like it.
Okay. Not a mug, a teacup with the sauce. Anyway, but
that's what I have right here. Yeah.
But I was gonna say, my camera. Oh yeah, I see it. Yeah, I see it. You got like a weird just for our. I see.
Yeah,
it.
I do have it's a weird. Nice I have a weird.
There's a
thing
weird.
Going
there's
on.
A yeah. You got a weird. Well, it's yeah. Your background's a little fuzzed out, which I know the Zoom types like. Some people like to do that. Some people with messy apartments like to do that. I don't think your apartment's messy. Yeah. See, that's great. Why did that? Why was that fuzzed out?
Yeah. This is
your
this
decor is as lovely as you know everything I've seen of yours. I mean, just your clothes, your decor, your whole style is great. But
so you
started with tea. Now, here's the question about tea readings that I have: is why tea? Why not coffee? Why not hot chocolate? Why not? I mean, I don't get it.
Oh yeah, why tea? You can definitely use coffee or cacao, or if you have unfiltered wine, you can read wine sediment. So for me, I just like tea. Tea is just my thing. So I have read many other forms of randomized divination. Let's just say that. I'll start at the beginning. I was trying to figure out.
Please, I want to hear the whole story.
So when I was a kid, my beginning as someone who could read symbols was as a little girl. My dad and I used to draw together, and we would take a piece of paper and a pen and scribble all over it and then trade. And the game was to learn to find pictures in the chaos. But what it taught me to do, besides amusing me as a child, what it taught me to do was to find symbols and pictures in tea or any number of other kinds of, we'll say, media, anything. Mm-hmm. So I can read symbols in any kind of chaos that is in front of me. But don't ask me about like the news. I can't read that chaos. But when I look into chaos. A teacup, yeah, I don't know that I want to.
Yeah, no, forget that. We don't. We can't stand that. But, that's just chaos for chaos' sake. So, but the loose tea in the cup.
Yeah. So the first experience I had with loose tea, I think it was around the holidays when I was 15 or 16. I was gifted loose tea for the very first time. And back then in York, PA, loose tea was a very special thing. There was no Amazon. There was nowhere to buy it. My mom had to order it from a mail order catalog, and it came with a little wire tea ball. Well, the wire tea ball was kind of a piece of crap, and it broke the very first time I used it. So within my teacup, my tea was loose. It was scattered. And as I drank it, I remember saying to my mom, it looks like that's a cat and that looks like a basket. And she said that was a form of divination in Europe many years ago. You should give it a try. So I got a notebook and I started saying, like, this is what a cat looks like, and this is what a basket looks like, or a flower. And I just intuited my own meanings for the symbols. And that's how I started. And I just sort of taught myself in that way. There was no book around then. There was no internet to look things up on. And I developed my own language for reading symbols just by doing it.
Now, is that the traditional way that people have read tea leaves in the past, or is that just your way?
I don't know. Every tea leaf reader I know has their own way. So, yes, there aren't tons of us around, but we tend to know each other, and we all read differently.
There's a whole tea leaf community, like reading people.
A small one, but yes.
Yeah.
And we occasionally all chat or get on a chat like this, and it's funny, we all come from different directions, but we'll arrive at similar readings for someone. So even if we read symbols differently, we assign meanings to them that end up in the same direction. It's really interesting how it seems to sift out.
And I guess this is probably a good time. I should probably outline these shows and have a structure, but you know me, I don't. So probably a good time, because you were kind enough to do a reading for me. And Nicole, apparently my reading is something that Risa has never seen before.
Oh, wow.
And before you get to...
You have a really unique symbol in it.
I do. And but before you talk about that, I was afraid, because I did what you told me to do, and I had seen other cups that you has had as examples, and I didn't have as many tea leaves in the cup as the other examples. What does that mean?
You had plenty.
Did I?
You had plenty. Yes. Absolutely.
You had cups that were like full of tea, and I just had, I mean, it was scattered, but it was like, it didn't seem like there was a lot of tea to me.
You had plenty of tea in there for me to get a reading. Mm-hmm. You didn't have a lot of blockages, which is a lovely thing for you.
I definitely don't have blockages. I'm too open, if anything else, but, Nicole, apparently in my future, I'll be smoking a lot of weed and watching The Wizard of Oz and Pink Floyd and matching them up, because there was a lava lamp in my tea read.
You know, I have to tell you, that is not in my symbology language. I've never had one in a teacup ever. Nope. I went online and looked up like symbolic meaning for lava lamp. There wasn't one. So I pulled out a dream dictionary, and that's what I have for you, is the dream dictionary meaning of a lava lamp. But that wasn't one of the bigger aspects of your cup that I would want to share. So I did make notes that I'll send you afterwards, just some general notes. So would you like me to start?
Yeah. Yes, I would like you to start.
Do you want me to show the picture to the camera?
If you can, I you know, I can edit it in, so it's up to you. But so Nicole sees it.
So I'm starting here under the handle, and that is what represents you as you are in this moment. And it's because most people hold their teacup, you know, on the handle. Mm-hmm. They leave their biggest energy imprint there. And the first symbol immediately under it was a very faint bull. And I
faint
don't
bowl?
Bull, B-U-L-L.
Oh, bull. Oh, bull. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And
yes. Toro. Yes. I got it. Okay.
Just like that. Yes. So the fact that it didn't show up fully formed tells me that you give away a lot of yourself to other people. And even though you are strong and you have all of this very powerful energy, you spend most of it on other people, not on yourself. And immediately under that is the letter U. So I know that was representing you. And then you had two bats flying along. I really like bats because they kind of represent the idea that new things are coming and you're going to make room for them in your life. So keep that in mind, especially because one of the bats is carrying a triangle. And a triangle is a new opportunity, usually in business. Mm. So because we only have so much time, I'm going to skip over some parts of your cup and you can read it in the notes, but I'm going to hit the high points.
Well, I'm glad that my tea leaves are goth. That's I'm glad that happened, but go right ahead.
So I split the cup into two sides. There's an emotional side and a material side. And when I'm reading a cup, I usually place a little more weight on the emotional side because our emotional state kind of colors how we see our material world. So that said, in your deep emotional state, you spend a lot of time putting on a great presentation. And then underneath, you have a lot of confusion. You are a little bit unsure about some of the relationships in your life. And there's a word in your cup. It says month one. I stared at it for a long time. I was like, it's actually spelled out month one. So I think that in January, you're going to have someone come along. I really want to show this.
Yeah, I don't know why it's, because I think you're reversed. So that's why every time you, okay.
Do you see this right here?
Yes, month
one. This is you, and somebody's like talking at you and talking at you and talking at you. And I feel like come January, month one, you are going to be in a new situation, and it's going to probably be something to do with your work, that someone is going to be talking at you and talking at you to the point where you're going to almost feel fed up. And the other thing that came up on this side is something that's kind of calling you to look after your own health a little bit more. So there's also a resting dragon, which I kind of love. It shows me how strong you can be, how absolutely fierce and capable and well-equipped you are to handle life. But this dragon is laying down. It's like taking a break. And a much more dominant energy on this side is a mouse. So I would encourage you to be a little bit bolder and to go after what you want for yourself, especially in your personal life, that it's okay to embrace the things that you know you want and the people you know you want to have around you. Now, heading past all that, here, I'm going to be backwards again. There's a big gap. There's a big opening.
Right. I saw the big gap.
Yep. So there's two ways to look at a gap in a cup. You can look at it as an opportunity for new things to come in, or you can look at it as, oh crap, there's a big gap in my life and there's going to be an emptiness. So
take a wild guess what I will interpret that as.
I'm sure you will. But I think that this is a gap of time that's coming along probably after January, after you get through this person who is coming along to make you an offer. I think this gap is coming along to give you a break to regroup, because then on your material side, you have two of the most incredible symbols in my reading repertoire. You have a thunderbird and a dragon together. It's pretty fantastic. A thunderbird is a Native American symbol. The thunderbird is a shapeshifter, the ultimate symbol of power and getting what you want. And the dragon is the animal that can traverse all four elements. So capable, so fiery, so able to do everything. The one stopgap I see is that sometimes you get way too caught up in your feelings about your work. You have to let that go if you want to grab this freaking amazing opportunity that's coming your way. I would look for this opportunity to start up in the new year. And the other thing to tell you about that is you shouldn't be stubborn about letting old things go. Two things showed up in your cup that made me think that maybe you hold on to things that are ready to be let go of. And it's okay to respect and honor where you've been. But there's a big axe in your cup. It's a reminder that if you want this new stuff to come along, this incredible new opportunity, you're definitely going to have to let go of some old things. And the truth is, those cycles are done. They've already completed themselves, and you know it in your heart, but you're maybe a little bit attached to some of the older things you've done professionally, or people that maybe have been part of your life but don't need to be anymore, that it's okay to let go of. So I'm just talking and talking and talking. Do you have any questions about anything?
I'm just kind of taking it all in, and I'm trying to figure out where that comes in my life. And unfortunately, it almost sounds like you're telling me to to let go of the stand up and the podcast for something better?
I don't know that specifically, but I think that when it happens, you're going to know it immediately.
All right.
I think you're going to know immediately that something fantastic has come your way. And I'm looking through my notes really quickly to see.
But also possibly leave LA behind, which I've contemplated.
That could be what you have to leave behind, but you could still do your podcast from anywhere in the world. So, I wanted to tell you, the lava lamp really stumped me. I'm not going to lie. I sat here and I thought about it and I looked at it and it was so clear in the tea. And I was just like, I guess this is a cue for you. This is something that's going to mean something
to start doing drugs or what?
Well, the Dream Dictionary said it represents feeling joy in how weird your situation is and that it can be wonderful to be in a strange situation.
I've never shied away from strange situations. So
I guess that it was supposed to be a fit for you.
I guess so. I don't know. I feel like I should buy a blacklight poster. Nicole, from you know me well enough, what do you think of this this reading?
I mean, it's one of those things that proves itself pretty quickly. I mean, I don't have an interpretation. I don't interpret symbols.
Other people's.
But I would say it'll be something you're going to know pretty soon.
Well, it's, January, I would guess.
Yeah.
So
I think some of it will start playing out faster than that.
I mean, I know a little bit more about your personal life, and I know you are looking for a new opportunity, so maybe you get it.
Well, and I'm just coming off a gap of something, so I don't know if that's the gap that's in the cup, or that might not be in the future. That might be the gap right now, but I don't know.
But I could definitely see a work opportunity in your future because right now you're very open to it and you're trying to attract it. So,
right, okay,
we'll know soon enough.
We'll know in January, I suppose.
The one other thing that happened here is showed two people negotiating, and I feel called to tell you not to settle for less than what you want. And even though you might think you're making a big ask, to make it.
Okay.
Because the opportunity was so strong and you had a thunderbird and a dragon with it. So that was my one little piece of advice for you on that.
All right. Well, it's, I don't know. I don't know how to interpret that. I've got to really sit with this, but we'll see. I mean, that it sounds like if I play it right, which, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, there's a really good opportunity coming.
It looks like it. It looks like a fantastic opportunity, like the kind of thing that might change your life. There's also an 8 in the cup, which in numerology is the number for money.
Cool.
I could definitely use that. Now, Rissa, here's a question for you. And thank you so much for giving me the reading. And that's why you're on the show, because I want people to take advantage of your reading, tea readings, smoke readings, tarot readings, and we're going to get into smoke readings and tarot readings. And I'm very curious about that. Like I said, we barely scratched the surface with you, and you're so fascinating. But Nicole and another person gave me tarot readings just before the pandemic, and neither one of them said, you know what, there's gonna be a worldwide pandemic and everybody's gonna be locked up for 2 years. So what every psychic that I talked to says, oh, I knew that was going to happen, I just didn't want to say it, which I call bullshit on most of them. So why did no psychics predict the pandemic? What happened there?
To be fair, Mark, I said we were due for a new plague. I did say that.
But what I specifically asked
was what it would be. But I mean, I said that every 100 years we have a plague about this time.
Okay. But I was specifically asking.
Just me being rational, though.
I was specifically asking about a woman. You're like, yeah, I can see that happening. And then it didn't happen. Anyway,
I won't do more terrible.
And mainly because there was a plague and she moved to Austin. But, among other things. Did you see the pandemic coming, Rissa? Be honest.
No, I won't lie to you about that. I did not see the pandemic coming. The one thing that kept showing up every single cup I read going into that time had a squirrel in it. And to me, that means it's time to save up for a rainy day, that it's time to save your resources. That was the only clue I had. But I mean, I didn't read that as a pandemic. I did notice a pattern that everybody's cup had the squirrel. Some people's had two or three. And I thought, I wonder what's coming that everybody needs to save their resources and their money. And I thought it was probably going to be something financial. I did not assume it was going to be a plague. Although, Nicole, I 100% agree with you that the earth was overdue for a plague. Yeah. And scientifically speaking, it should have happened even sooner. And I'm glad that it wasn't something even worse.
Yeah, we're very fortunate.
Yeah.
And I'm teasing Nicole. She knows I'm teasing her, but still,
I'm going to be reading again. You've lost your rights to my reading.
I get it. No, trust me. I understand, but it's but you weren't the only one to give me a reading, and I was like, well, wait a second. I think the first thing that should pop out is you'll be locked in your house for 2 years, and there are no cards for that.
She's right. You would have gotten something like you need a save or something.
There's like three cards. What are you talking about? There's cards for everything.
No, there isn't.
Not really.
I'm kidding. Okay. There's an opportunity. Maybe that's it. In January, I'm going to come out with a tarot deck that has a plague card, and then I'm going to be a millionaire. See what you have manifested, Risa. And honestly, the pandemic turned out to be a rejuvenation for you.
From what I've gathered for you.
You really found yourself.
It was a different kind of time for me. I was also going through a divorce at the time, and after being married for 18 years, and I honestly love spending time alone. So that wasn't really a terrible thing for me. I got to hang out with my dog, figure out who I was. I got to do so many virtual readings, which was fantastic. And I still worked on the magazine just the same.
Right.
I did miss giving tours. That was a sad thing to have to give up, but they came back too.
Right.
So, it was definitely a time when I could pull back and collect. You know, Nicole, it would be like being in the hermit card energy, right? And that wasn't a bad thing.
See, they're talking inside tarot stuff that I don't understand. Tell me about smoke readings, because I'm really curious about that.
So, smoke readings are probably, aside from, you know, human-generated divination, like people having visions, probably the oldest form of divination known to humankind. Imagine just sitting by a fire looking into the smoke. And I would say that if you can look at and read symbols, you can read smoke just as well as anything else like tea or any other system of divination that's randomized. So I used to look for the symbols in ash first, and they move very quickly, just like smoke. But that's where my fire reading started. And over the pandemic, I met a psychic named Julie Gray, and I learned her system of smoke reading, and I sort of took it from there and changed it to suit how I work. And that's how I do smoke reading now. I can read actual smoke. Now, it doesn't work on a windy day, and it doesn't work in a drafty room. And because, you know, people always ask me these obvious questions, like, what if it's windy? Well, that's not a good day for it. And I also use a candle sometimes. You can't use the ones with a smokeless wick. That's a no-go. But if you get a nice cheap candle, you can get smoke coming up off of the wick and collect it by holding the candle of paper like this. And soot will form on the page. It's actually really pretty, and I've even used it to create art that I've sold in art galleries. So it's a fascinating process and quite unusual to look at. And
smoke from a candle that you're putting on papers.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, I understand that virtual readings were a necessity, but are you losing anything going virtually? Because
I prefer it. Not that I don't love meeting people face to face, I do, but I could spend more time with their reading on a virtual system. So when you hire me to do a virtual reading, you get almost twice as much of my time as you get in person. Because if I'm reading for you in person, there's somebody coming in the next hour. Like, you've got to be done. Like, at the end of that hour, you're gone. You're out the door.
But isn't there energy there that wouldn't be there on Zoom or whatever else? Because Nicole will tell you it's
I haven't found that to be the same for me, because I'm looking at
it's different with T, because you have it's different. You're still getting that energy because you are the one who's showing the teacup. Like with tarot, I need you to pick the cards, very specifically that, and you can't do that. But with the tea reading, you are totally drinking the tea yourself. You're taking the picture and then she's just interpreting it.
Right.
Correct.
I would think so, but isn't like face-to-face and energy in the room part of it?
It can be. It can also be a distraction.
Oh, really?
Especially if you have absolutely. Well, you know, when you're reading in public, you always have the possibility of other people hanging around. I've definitely had the situation where somebody had a partner along and I'm looking in the teacup and I can tell that's an abusive situation. And I'm like, should I even mention this? This person is standing right here. And I've even said before, like, could we talk alone? You know, and then the truth will spill out. But it's very difficult sometimes in person to deal with people being around, or like shoppers in a store. If I'm in an antique store, you know, there's other people, just they'll just come and stand there and listen. So there are benefits to doing things virtually. You have your privacy, you have more time with me, and I spend more time usually on the drawing as well. I'm not crushed to finish it in 20 minutes.
But you still get the energy virtually.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. I don't know. So you do. So, and the same, you feel it's the same with tarot as well.
I have done a lot of virtual tarot readings, and unlike Nicole, I don't usually let people touch my cards. I just don't. And I mean, sometimes I have a few decks that I will use for public readings, especially like speed readings, the quick 15-minute readings that you do like for charity events or things like that. So I have special decks I use for that. But I also have vintage decks that have been in my family a long time. I don't let other people handle those cards anymore. They're old, they're fragile, and they're really meaningful to me. And I'd rather have the energy of my family in them than somebody else. So when I read with those, I read virtually with them, and they have served me very well. So I respect their own personal power and their own energy.
It was Halloween, and you hosted a witchy dinner.
Oh yeah, that was last year. But yeah.
Oh, was that last year? Okay. Mm-hmm. A vegan witchy dinner.
That's right. It was actually a fundraiser.
Yeah, no, I know. And we've had plenty of guests on our podcast to say that every powerful woman is a witch. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I don't know. There are a lot of powerful women I've never met, and I try never to call judgments before I've met someone. But
it's not a bad thing.
Oh, I don't think so either. I think every powerful woman is deeply sure of herself and is able to manifest her wishes, desires, and wants. So I guess that would make them pretty witchy.
Now, what happened during this witchy dinner? Can you break the witchy secrecy? Or
sure, it was a public
event. Was it a seance, or was it a?
No, we didn't do a seance. It was, let's see, it was held in a barn, and it was catered by a fantastic vegan catering company. And she made witchy themed food. She had like a mood ring cocktail that changed colors, and it was really fun. I told history of witchcraft in Pennsylvania, and then everybody got one tarot card as their reading. And it was just really fun. And the same 501c3 charity did a tacos and tarot party this spring. And right. Myself and another tarot reader did quick speed readings for people. And they also had like a huge taco dinner. So right. that was also really fun.
Wow, speed readings and speed tacos. That's great. and not only of all the things that we talked about, you were a horror hostess. What happened with that? Because you only did one episode and I really liked it.
Unfortunately, the editor had to get another job. So we had two more episodes in progress, and one of them is literally one scene from being complete. And as soon as she is able to finish the editing, I'm excited to get that online. And we have another one almost ready to be filmed. The script is done. The research is done. But I'd love to see that project go forward too.
I think you're an ideal horror host. And also, I also saw you did a Halloween event not too long ago with apparently a nice tight corset and goats.
I did indeed. That was another fundraiser. It was for Lancaster Farm Sanctuary, and it was another all-vegan event. And I researched and told stories about Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which I knew very little about. And it was an interesting contrast to York and Gettysburg, which are histories I'm more familiar with. They have the wackiest history.
Lancaster, Pennsylvania?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have an example of that?
How about a 10-foot mummy walking through a public park with swords through its head?
Oh,
yeah, swords through its head.
When was this?
This would have been in the late 1960s, and apparently a lot of people saw it. It was reported on the local paper. They also have a cryptid there called the Albert Witch, and it's like a 4-foot tall Bigfoot, and it likes to eat apples.
Oh. Well, as Bigfoots tend to do, or big feet tend to do. I don't know what the plural is, but yeah.
Like I said, the most fascinating set of stories ever. Yeah.
And you do all these things in Pennsylvania, but you also you tell the real witch stories, not the Blair Witch bullshit that was in the movie. The real witch stories.
Well, when I had my big moment on WYPR, which was the NPR station in Maryland, it was for my history into the research of Maryland witches. And people always ask about the Blair Witch, and it is a fiction. It was a brilliant fiction. A mad applause to those two guys who put that together and fooled us all for a while. But yes,
for that one, movie, not three.
Yes, but. Brilliant marketing, really. Yeah. And that is the most famous witch in Maryland, and it's not a true story. So, but Maryland has plenty of true witch stories, though, and lots of people in...
I said Pennsylvania, but you're talking Maryland, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have researched both, but the Blair Witch was Maryland. She is a Maryland story by two Maryland film students.
Right.
So...
Nicole, do you have any magical questions? Because I know that you love when people talk magic on the show and spiritual things.
What makes tea leaves so easy to read? Like, how do you see the symbols? Like, is it just you, or is there like a book like of symbols for tea leaves?
There are lots of books of symbols for tea leaves, and you will find there's very little overlap between them. So when people are interested in tea, I always say, first, practice looking. Because it doesn't matter how many books you read, if you can't see it, it's not your divination, and that's okay. And I should turn this cup so you can see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So I have my teacup all drank, and I put the saucer on top, and I'm going to swish it away from my computer so there's no tea spattering over this.
I'll let you get away with it this time.
Oh yeah, this is a nice busy cup.
See, that's unlike my cup with all that tea that's in there. I didn't have that much tea.
It's very unlike it. Yeah, it's very unlike your cup, but your cup isn't wrong. This is just different because we have different lives.
Your cup isn't wrong. So, if you looked at that, could you look into your own future?
I don't read for myself, and I don't read for people who are very close to me. I don't feel so I can do it without bias.
Okay. And Nicole, you know, you have something in common. It sounds like you have a lot in common with Rissa, but you know what you do have in common.
What?
Is that you're both poets.
Oh, cool.
See, like I say, you take every box. And Nicole just published her book of poetry, Slow Burn. It's available on lulu.com, not hulu.com, as I've said before.
Congratulations. So
you were so excited to say that.
That's exciting.
Thank you.
Yay.
And Rissa's a published poet, and you sent me a 3 poems mm-hmm. option to read on the air, and I picked Enchantress.
Mm-hmm. And would you like me to read it?
I would love for you to read it, but you probably here's what's weird. I dated a girl last year that was psychic, that did readings and things. And she knew things about me that I don't know how she knew. And it was weird. Like, she's like, oh, you work over here, right? And this is what you, I'm like, how do you know that? And she may have looked it up online or found something, but it was so weird. Like, she would, like, every time we would text, she would, like, throw, is this right about you? I'm like, oh my God, how did you know that? Does this happen to you? Do you freak people out like that?
Sometimes. There are people that I call loud thinkers. And some people's thoughts or the things about them are just louder than others. And you can't help but pick them up.
I'm guessing I'm a loud thinker.
You might be. I haven't been around you enough to determine that. But
okay.
And also, it's probably different for different people. So, sure. You know, and each psychic, there are a lot of people who fall under the category of psychic, and it works differently for everyone. So, I mean, there are people who are mediums who can speak to the dead. There are people who are seers who, you know, do interpretations like Nicole and I. There are people who are telepaths, and that's a totally different skill. And sure, there's definitely overlap between the different kinds of psychics. I didn't even hit everything because I missed animal communicators. And there's just all different ways to utilize the power of your brain and the parts of it that we don't necessarily use on a regular basis. But there's all different ways to exercise a psychic gift.
Yeah. It was so weird, but, and here's the ironic thing is that she ghosted me, but what are you going to do? Anyway, but you know why I picked Enchantress, and I mean, they were all great, but that's the one that really hit me. So I would love to hear whenever, if you'd like to read it.
I would be happy to read it. Are you ready now? Let me pull it up. I don't have it memorized.
No, that's okay. Nicole, are you ready?
I have poetry memorized either.
Are you ready, though, Nicole, to hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah, is Trouble ready to hear it? The Trouble the Cat?
Trouble's sleeping.
Okay, all right.
Oh, well, good. Yeah. All right, well, here we go. Enchantress. Real evil doesn't dwell in the shadows. It asserts more than enough beauty to draw you under, to hold you loosely until you don't want to go. Real evil is seduction, not mangled with fright. She tastes as sweet as 1,000 souls, all of them coiled on her tongue, singing the loveliest song of temptation. And you can decide to follow, to give her everything. Love is paramount to the pain, a catastrophe that plunges into the experience of living. She feels you yearn for tenderness. Everyone understands this need. They have known it, missed it, dreamed of it, healed from it. But when real evil comes, will you fall for it? Will you enter her mouth, taste of eternal ardor, give her everything, trade your soul for her lovely lips? Or will you stay behind, wishing once more for the soft hands to tuck you into the shabby bottom of the world, tummy roaring with hunger?
Woo!
That's great. That was great. You are quite the enchantress, Rissa. You know that.
Thank you.
What's great about modern technology, even though I've complained about Zoom almost every show, you can give readings all over the world. And if people That's want true. Tea readings, smoke readings, tower readings, which is your most popular? Tea readings?
Tea.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if people all over the world want to get tea readings, smoke readings, tarot readings, how would they get a hold of you?
My website, teaandsmoke.com.
Teaandsmoke.com. And on YouTube, you give instructions on how to get your tea leaves together. And it's I could tell from myself that you're very intuitive, and it's given me a lot to think about. And you just barely scratched the surface. A real reading would be a lot more than what you just gave me. Yeah, we have.
It would.
I trust me, Risa, I could talk to you all night, but we only have an hour. So you have some creepy Christmas stuff going on. Just let us know.
I do. So in both Maryland and Pennsylvania, I'll be giving talks on the 13 Unmerry Monsters of Christmas. This is another program I researched and wrote, and I love delivering it because it takes you back in time to when Christmas wasn't a commercial entity, when it was actually the scary holiday of the year before we switched it to Halloween. Back when, you know, Krampus and the Bellsnickel and the Yule Cat roamed the countryside. And it's a fantastically fun program. So I start with the beginning of what winter solstice once was, and I come all the way forward into how we celebrate today and where Santa Claus began. There's some weird stuff about Santa Claus and his history.
Well, we've had Santa Claus on the show, we know. I'll send you a couple clips. Yeah, Santa Claus is he's got a weird side. We've got it to his dark side.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's pretty wild.
So the actual Saint Nicholas had a crypt, and people used to line up to touch the goo that oozed out of it after his death.
Ooh,
and,
really?
Yeah. History is so interesting.
Did they like make it into a candy cane, or what they did?
You know, I don't think so. They believed it could heal illnesses, and they would take the goo coming out of the crypt and like rub it on their children and stuff.
Wow.
So yeah, super hard. History can be really quite dark.
I smell a rebooking for Christmas, Nicole. What do you think?
Well, if you want to hear stories of Christmas cryptids, I'm happy to tell them. It's one of my favorites.
Like I said, we barely scratched the surface. Go to teaandsmoke.com and Google Risa Miller. You'll find so many great things. You're a fascinating woman, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Nicole, for having me. It was absolutely a pleasure to talk to you both, and of course, the kitty.
Thank you.
Yes, Trouble the Cat, everybody's favorite. And Nicole, how do people get your poetry book, and how do people get a hold of you for local readings in Los Angeles, or are you going to start doing virtual readings now? Maybe.
No, I only do local.
Okay.
I'm at Nicole Six Books on Instagram, Nicole H Six on Facebook, and you can find my book on lulu.com. It's Slow Burn, but just look up my name, Nicole Six, and you'll see everything written by me.
And look out for the movie Slice, which is a golf horror movie. We're going to the premiere tomorrow at the Chinese Theater. And Nicole, I don't want to give any spoilers, but apparently golf does not agree with Nicole.
I have a cameo, that's for sure.
Yes. And I'm Goth Comedian on all social media. Everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye. Enjoy your tea.